I was going to say something theological, but it's hard to do it past pretzels. I said, based upon what was just said, so the thought of Yahweh coming low to us is a thought too high for us to understand. Right? His lowliness is too high.
You know, it just occurs to me in the first chapters of Isaiah 2, 3, 4, that high-low theme really dominates there. The humbled shall be exalted, and the arrogant shall be shafaled, brought low. And this is a nice Isaianic theme, this sort of reversal of high and low. And here God, who is high, makes himself low. I mean, now we're to the manger and the cross and all this stuff. But it's, you know, when Jesus starts talking about the first shall be last and the last shall be first, he didn't invent this idea.
Right. Although he could have.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, he didn't invent that right then.
Yeah, right. Ooh, this is an invention of the pre-incarnate Christ. Yeah. That's right. Ooh, let's talk about the Malach Yahweh. And by the way, in Matthew, you get the same, a similar thing in when Peter is rebuked for thinking the things of men and not the things of God. You know, so you got the same kind of thing going on explicitly there. So we have another parable. Yeah, another parable, Matthew 20. And in order to introduce it, I'd like to point out the pericope that precedes as the conclusion of chapter 19. We have the well-known account of the rich young guy. I don't remember if he's called a ruler. I don't think he's called a ruler in Matthew, but only in Luke. But then, of course, he goes away sad because Jesus tells him to sell everything he has, and he's not able to do so because he's rich. Then Peter chimes in verse 28, wants to know, well, look, we've left everything, and we followed you. What will be for us? And here, you know, it's that Jesus doesn't always sound like a Lutheran. Because, you know, if you asked a Lutheran that question, Luther would say, repent. Jesus doesn't say that at all. He says, well, actually, you get to sit on 12 thrones, right, and judge 12 tribes of Israel, and you'll receive all these great things in the resurrection. And then he says in verse 30, many first will be last, and last first. Okay. Now, I want to point that verse out because at the conclusion of the parable of the workers in the vineyard, Jesus reverses the saying. He puts the second half first and the first half second, and I think he does so intentionally. At the end of chapter 19, Jesus has been teaching about the way that God exalts the lowly and about how a rich man can't enter the kingdom of heaven. It's harder for for that to happen than a camel to squeeze through the eye of a needle. And no, there is no gate in Jerusalem called the Eye of the Needle. You read that in some of these commentaries, you're just making that up. So he's talking there about his disciples being lifted up. And now Peter chimes in and wants to know about what's going to happen in the regeneration. Jesus tells him, but now this parable, the workers in the vineyard, is told specifically to counter any false thinking that might occur as a result of what Jesus has just said about how the last will be first and the first will be last, right? Oops, excuse me, I got it backwards. At the end of verse 19, he talks about the first being last and the last being first. Now, lest we misunderstand what this is all about, let me tell you, Jesus says, what the reign of heaven is like. So we'll come back to this when we get to the end. So verse 20, chapter 20, verse 1. Again, this present tense introduction, so this is how it works now in the reign of heaven, primarily, although there's always an eschatological final cast to the kingdom parables. So the reign of heaven, the reign of the heavens, is now this way. It's like to a man, a householder. Is this God or Jesus? I'm not sure. It doesn't really matter. Because then you're going to ask the question, well, who's the steward? And once again, you can assign a value if you want, but it doesn't matter too much. So it's like a man, a steward, hustis, who, this is a correlative pronoun that very often is just acting like the plain relative pronoun, so it could, I think, equally well be hus, who went out, hama proi, literally, together early. And sometimes these two words are just used in conjunction, according to the lexicon at least, and it just means early. For this purpose, here's an infinitive of purpose, in order to hire, misthosasthai, to hire for himself workers into the vineyard of him. Now, the vineyard, of course, is an Old Testament image for Israel, you know. So, I've thought about this. It may be that the primary application and addressees of this parable are people sort of like the apostles who are workers in a more narrow sense. Because you do have that theme, you know, people, it's like pray the Lord of the harvest to send workers into his harvest, you know. So I would want to say that you can make a general Christian application, but maybe in its original setting, he's talking to folks like the 12 whom he's called, you know. So again, I don't necessarily want to make it an either or, either, you know, a limited number of workers like clergy, you know, or laity. Let's maybe do a both and, but realize that the way the story unfolds, it is talking about those who work in the vineyard. But then, again, I think there is valid application to, by extension, sort of, to all Christians, because all Christians have a vocation. Anyway, this is what he did. He went out to hire workers in a vineyard. Verse 2, you could maybe figure out what symphoneo means. It means to agree, and it's aorist participle active, a nominative masculine singular, and the referent is the he of the main verb. This is the so-called stealth referent. There isn't one, so it's found in ap estelen, you know, at the end of the next line. So he, temporally, works well after agreeing with the workers of a denarius, tain hemeron. This is probably an accusative of extent. The accusative case can answer the question, how long, how far? And this answers the question, how long? Answer, for a day. So he's going to pay him a denarius, which apparently, according to the lexica and all the sources, is kind of a typical day's wage. Ap estelen, he sent autus them into the vineyard of him, into his vineyard. So far, so good. By the way, I think I've mentioned this before, one of the fun things about the longer parables of Jesus is the artistry involved. And there's often very significant, for interpretation purposes, a very significant emphases, parallelisms, contrast as the story unfolds. So far it's an ordinary story. Verse 3. So he specifically agrees with a denarius with these guys. Verse 3, and after going out about, peri, the third hour, aden, he saw, right? This is the aorist of horao. He saw others, hestotas. This is a perfect participle active of histemi. And it has, according to the bizarre character of histemi, it simply has a present tense. And there are two ways to translate this participle, actually. It's conceivable that it's a participle of indirect discourse. That is, it tells the content of what he realized when he went out about the third hour. So you translate this way. He saw that others were standing. Okay? So it's the equivalent of a hutty clause. Participles can do that. But I don't know if it's the import to say that that's what all of a sudden he realized that others were standing there, or if it's just what Veltz in his grammar calls a supplementary participle. That is, it's just sort of glommed onto alus. What did he see? Others standing. Okay? And I actually rather think that's the easier and simpler way to take it. So what did he see? He saw others standing in the agora, argus, idle. They weren't doing anything. They were just reading Peeper or something. And to those guys, verse 4, he said, Hippogata, go, and go also you. You also go. A little bit emphatic there. We don't need a you. And we've got also. You also get going into the vineyard, and ha aeon, whatever might a be just, I will give to you. This is sort of the equivalent of a future more vivid conditional sentence. So actually would be called a conditional relative clause, ha aeon a dikaion. Now, the letter eta is my favorite Greek word because according to the accentuation, it can mean about six or seven different things, right? Anybody want to go out way out on a limb and parse this baby? What would this be? Anybody know? A? Yeah. It's a present subjunctive active from a me or I me. Exactly right. Third person singular. Yeah. So it's following aeon, so it takes a subjunctive. Whatever might be right or just, I will give to you. So now the story's going along, and he's agreed with a denarius for a whole day. A couple hours later, he says, I'll give you what's right. Okay, this is still pretty cool. This is kind of the way things are normally done in the world, right? Now we have the little shift of referent, hoide, and they ap elthen. They went away, verse 5. Again and again, similarly, going out about the sixth and ninth hour, he did likewise. Okay, so he's going to pay them whatever's dikaios, right? Whatever's righteous, whatever's right or just, okay? So far, so good. Now it gets a little strange, okay? And about the ninth hour, after going out, he found others standing. This is, it's very much like he's been doing all along. And he says to them, now we have a little bit of a dialogue. Why, hoda, here, hestekate, again, this is now the perfect indicative active, second person plural of histemi, and it's got a present sense, just like a present indicative active. Why are you standing during the whole day idle? Right? So why are you guys out here reading paper? They say to him, Hati, because no one us hired for himself. Actually, I didn't look up if mistao only occurs in the middle. Well, anyway, either way, it makes good sense. He says to them, Hippagata kai himes, you also go into the vineyard. And he doesn't say anything about what he's going to pay him. Right? All right. This is a pretty good story so far. In a sense, the goal, in a sense, with the parable is to let it surprise you the way it first surprised the original readers or listeners. Right? Well, the trap is about to spring shut. And when it had become late, verse 8, upsias is actually an adjective, but in this form it comes to mean evening. When it become evening, the Lord of the vineyard says to his steward, his epitropos, kalizan, call the workers, and apadas, pay to them the wage. As you begin, after beginning from the last until the first. We all know what's going to happen now. And after they came, those about the ninth hour received ana denarion, one denarius. Whoa, this is a little surprising. I wonder what the first guys are going to get. Right? And coming, the first. Note that we've dropped out the middle groups here. Right? So we're just going to contrast first and last. And this is going to be what it's like in the reign of heaven. And coming, the first guys, numidzoned. They reckoned that more they will receive. And they received one denarius also themselves. It's a little emphatic here. They also received one denarius. And after they received, my favorite Greek word, you weren't supposed to do this at registration, they began to grumble against the master of the house and say, these last guys during 1 hour or for 1 hour did or worked, and equal to us them you made. Now let's talk about us again in the dative, the guys bearing the burden of the day and the heat. We took the heat, and you made them equal to us. But he, answering to one of them, said, friend. This word occurs three times in Matthew. Once here, once with the guy in the wedding feast, and the guy says, friend, why don't you have the right garment on? And once in the garden where he says to Judas, friend, why are you here? This is not friend. This seems to be friend, like step back, Jack. Right? Friend, I am not wronging you. Let me ask you a question, and I expect you to say yes. Didn't of a denarius you agree with me? And the answer is, yeah. Aaron, take the your thing and go. And I wish to this last to give as also to you. Is it not? Oh, here's another question, expects a yes answer. It's right or proper for me what I wish to give with the things that are mine, isn't it? Answer, yes. Or is your eye wicked, paneros, because I am good? In this way, the last will be first, and the first will be last. What a strange kingdom in which the reward that you receive doesn't seem to depend upon the work that you've done. See? And again, here's where I think, you know, Jesus is deliberately reversing the logion at the end to say to Peter, lest he confuse the issue, which of course never happens with Peter, and never happens with us, to say, yeah, your work is really valuable, and you're going to sit on 12 thrones, you know, and it's going to be great, and the angels in heaven are going to sing. But as soon as you start comparing yourself to another brother, to another worker, let me tell you a little story about the graciousness, the surprising, shocking, offensive graciousness of the reign of heaven. It's a wonderful story, and really sets us up. I don't know how you'd, I'm not very good at preaching on parables because you want to try to get that surprise element, you know. So you'd have to kind of be creative in how you both, because there's law and gospel, right? The parable itself, it's gospel for the last workers, and it's a word of law for the first. So it's all sort of all right here. And it's time to stop. Questions, comments? Yeah, this parable is specifically for Christians who objected true deathbed conversions, right? And I like to tell the story about Bob Bond, who was converted and baptized at age 59 and who died of heart surgery at age 61. He'd lived the American life, drank a lot, partied a lot, cheated on his wife a lot, did whatever he darn well pleased. And as he prepared for heart surgery, which proved lethal to him, he said to me, his pastor, "Something's really bothering me." And I said, "What's that?" He says, I can't get over the fact that all those years I wasted my life." See, his attitude towards a late in life conversion is, "I wasted my life when I could have been living with and serving Christ." So if a church member objects to deathbed conversions, maybe they need a little adjustment on their own calling in life. You know, what could be better than parsing Greek verbs? Parsing Hebrew verbs, right? Identifying infinitive absolutes for three hey verbs where the hey disappears and nothing else is left either. Right. Okay, go in peace, as they say. No, go to class, as they say. Yeah. Are those the same?
Yeah, slightly different.
They're pretty close, yeah.
That's a very un-American.